Imagine you're watching the game at a buddy's house when you get a call that someone tried to break into yours. In a second, everything can change. That's why there's ADT. No one wants to feel unsafe in their own home. ADT security systems help keep your home safe with 24/7 monitoring. The ADT Plus app keeps you in control the whole time. ADT's network is built for those game time moments. They have the most company-operated monitoring centers in the industry. Don't leave your home wide open during an emergency. When every second counts, count on ADT. Visit ADT.com or call 1-800-ADT-ASAP.
What's going on, everybody? It's your boy, Corey Tulliba, the Wolf of Ball Street, your favorite draft analyst, We are here on the No Ceilings NBA Draft Pod to break down some questions. I got some answers for you. I went on the internet, went on Twitter, went in the No Ceilings Plus Discord, fishing for questions that y'all have for me. And today I'm going to break it down, answer some questions. So I picked out 10 questions splitting between our private Discord that you can get into by subscribing to No Ceilings Plus at NoCeilingsNBA.com, as well as publicly on Twitter. I am going to start out with the No Ceilings Plus Discord question from Serb. Who is your upperclassman that will hit the ground running in the NBA, or is there not one this year at all? My first thought was Nick Clifford. Anybody who has listened to the No Ceilings platform before or watched the show on YouTube knows that the entire No Ceilings crew is, you know, really high on Nick. We have been since last year. Albert and I did a film session with Nick very early in the draft cycle last year, thinking that this is a kid who should be a draft prospect. He went back to school, got even better, you know, worked on some of his creation, you know, he worked on his shooting, and he just took the leap that we all knew he was capable of. So Neek, as a fifth year guy, mature game, played really well in the tournament. He's a guy, first guy that came to mind. But then I started thinking about the playoffs in general, and I looked at the kind of players who were hitting the ground running. And honestly, rookies don't really play in the playoffs. The exception to that rule in the first round of the playoffs has been big men. So in my research, the three big men who were playing the most, or really the three rookies who were playing the most, were Zach Edey, Khalil Ware, and Quinton Post. So then I started thinking, all right, so who is a big man in this class, upperclassman, that I think could maybe find himself actually playing playoff minutes, depending on if he goes to a playoff team or not? And to me, that was Ryan Kalkbrenner. So I think one, you know, the thing that is consistent with that group of big men is they're all genuinely big, right? It's none of these 6'8", you know, small ball fives. These are legitimate big men. And Ryan Kalkbrenner is that. He's huge. So Ryan Kalkbrenner at like 7'2", 7'3", whatever he is, I think that he is the guy. Now, Kalkbrenner also is a guy who, like Quinton Post, although definitely not on the same volume, like Khalil Ware, can also kind of space the floor a little bit. So he gives you a little bit of a modern game. We saw Zach Edey experimenting with that in the regular season a little bit. But at the end of the day, like, guys who are going to be able to do the simple things and handle the physicality. Kalkbrenner is like a thick dude who, you know, blocks shots, finishes at the rim at a really high level, makes smart decisions, and has experience. So if there is one, Serb, I think that Ryan Kalkbrenner is probably my leading candidate for who is going to be able to hit the ground running. Matthew McKenna asks, who are your deeper cut international prospects draft fans need to be most familiar with for this cycle? And what do you think of their game slash draft ranges? Ideally, beyond the guys like Ben Saraf, Noah Senge, Nolan Traore, types that show up in every first round mock. So the guys who I kind of thought of were Hanson Yang. You know, this is a guy who has been on the radar for draft fans for, you know, a couple of years. He played really well in the FIBA, I want to say it was the U18 or 19s a couple of years ago. I was really impressed just as like a post hub who can really pass. He played in the summer league last year where, you know, he was pretty up and down, but, you know, he's playing against professional guys in the NBA summer league with the Chinese national team. So, you know, the talent discrepancy is still pretty big in those games, but I think he's really interesting. He's one of these guys who has like really good touch and footwork and skill in the post, but he's also just absolutely massive. And his playmaking is super interesting. Like, he's a guy that, you know, can operate at a DHO's. He's a guy who, you know, can make a short roll read and find cutters. And so to me, as guys who aren't getting like real first round love, he's kind of, you know, the guy who maybe people are familiar with, but also haven't really been checking up on as much. So he's a lot of fun. He's a guy that I think people should know, especially because, you know, look, he signed with Clutch, and I think, you know, Clutch is an agency who knows what they're doing. They're going to be on radars. Neo of Dallas is also another guy who's super interesting. He's like 6'7", kind of like point guardy wing. There are some people who are way higher on him than I am, but he has like the kind of skills where, you know, he at his absolute best when things are clicking and rolling, you know, you see like the shades and the influence of a Luka Doncic. Now, I'm obviously not trying to say that he is Luka. Obviously, he would be the number one pick in this draft if I thought that. But he has kind of like, you know, some interesting step backs and setup moves to get his shot off. He's tall and he's a creative passer. So those two I think are pretty interesting that are kind of off of the radar while still being on the radar for the draft sickos. Retro slash Braden asks, who is the best Australian in this draft? LOL. I think that the two guys that I would kind of say are Alex Condon and Tyrese Proctor. I'm not super high on either. Look, I haven't gone and numbered my big board after all of the withdrawals and, you know, going to the early entry list, but I want to say that neither of them were kind of in my first round. They're definitely in the border of that maybe 30 to 40 range is probably where I'd have both of those guys. I think Condon obviously is a guy who is a winner, you know, just coming off a national championship. He was a big part of that. That team, that offense, that defense. I question his shot. I think it looks kind of hitchy, but he's a really slick passer. I think you could throw him lobs. I think his shot blocking is something that, you know, is maybe not going to be a calling card at the next level, but, you know, he can certainly protect the rim a little bit and he could slide. He's just kind of like a do-it-all big. I think he projects more as a backup unless he can really figure out the shooting. But he's probably my number one Australian. Tyrese Proctor is a guy who's long been on the radar as, you know, playing at Duke. He was a potential lottery pick in the last couple of drafts in the preseason. I came around on Tyrese Proctor this year. I've kind of been out on him just because I was looking at him through the lens of like a primary ball handler who was supposed to be like a really slick playmaker, you know, like when he was first, you know, entering the college scene. And I never really saw that. Like, yeah, he was capable of making plays, but there were just too many times where he would like come off a screen and, you know, kind of like look somebody off and have to settle for a tough step back jumper or a tough, like contested shot. And like that kind of style just wasn't for me. This year, I think we saw a little bit more of like how he would operate in almost like a Derek White kind of role where he's not doing a ton of primary creation, but like he could do it a little bit, but then he's like absolutely lethal as a shooter off the ball and like is using his kind of like 6'5" frame to be active defensively. You know, I don't think he's anywhere near the kind of like defensive event creator of a guy like Derek White, but like, you know, for that Duke team, you know, you saw some shades of it. So I think those are probably the two best. I mean, I'm not necessarily a Rocco Zakarski guy. I wasn't in the preseason. You know, I know everybody freaked out about him. You looked at like his statistics at lower levels and they were like crazy efficient and all this. And then you go and you watch that film and you're like, oh, he's like 2 feet taller than everybody he's playing against in those competitions. But he certainly has potential as a lob threat, you know, kind of like drop big shot blocker. So Rocco Zakarski, definitely a guy that people are going to have on their radars. And definitely like a worthy swing, I think, in the second round, because he does have, you know, size and physical tools that you can't teach. And I think height is certainly a very important thing. And I think that, you know, kind of the NBL has, he's kind of hit the end of the line there. I think at this point he might as well try to get better in the league or in the G League. And I think a team, because of his physical tools, are definitely going to take a shot on him. Continuing with our Discord, No Ceilings Plus guys, Ori R, O-R-I-A-R, asks, is there any player who decided to stay that you think made a mistake to do so? Also, who stayed, meaning who is staying in the draft, and then also who stayed in college and made a mistake. So my two answers for that. So first, is there any player who decided to stay in the draft that I think made a mistake? I think Drake Powell made a mistake. I think teams are going to be interested in him. I think he's probably going to be a first rounder because he actually, when I saw him this season with North Carolina, I liked his game a lot better than when I saw him in high school because I thought, you know, he did a lot of the role player things. Very low usage role, but like defensively he was active. I thought his rotations were good. You know, he knocked down some spot up shots, things like that, But I think that if he had stayed in college, he could have developed some of the more intriguing, like, shot making off the bounce that I think people wanted to see coming into the year when they were talking about him like a top 10 pick. And him kind of entering the NBA early, while, yeah, I think he's athletic enough, I think he, you know, has the feel for that, and I think he can probably have a good chance to develop into a role player, I don't think he's going to get the opportunity to get on-ball reps and develop and reach his highest potential like he would have if he, you know, made a bag staying in college and was given maybe more room and more rope and more, you know, just ways to explore the studio space with his offensive game. So I kind of wished that he went back to school, just because I do think he has potential. And I think going to the NBA at this point, I just don't think he's going to get there with his skill set. The guy who stayed in college that I think made a mistake and should have left, I think, is Bennett Sturt. I would have had Bennett Sturt with a lottery grade. I think he would have been a top 20 pick in this class. And I get it. Stay with your coach. Go to Iowa. Prove that you could do it consistently at a high major level instead of, you know, just showing out and playing well in the tournament games. But I think that he probably should have entered this year. And, you know, I think maybe the feedback that he was getting was saying, hey, maybe you're not a first rounder. Maybe you're more of a second rounder. Maybe we want to see more. And maybe he's just listening to that feedback. But I think that he's talented enough that he would have ended up at the end of this pre-draft process as a first round pick. And I think he would have been a steal for whoever took him there.
The first few weeks back at school set the tone for the entire year. But with new teachers, schedules, and expectations, it can feel like a lot. If you're looking to help your child start strong and stay confident, I've been using IXL to make that transition so much easier. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts, from pre-K through 12th grade, it adapts to each child's level and pace, making it easy to spot and close learning gaps in just a few minutes a day before those gaps can snowball. Plus, it's trusted nationwide. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL, and it's used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. It's an easy, cost-effective way to get kids back into a learning routine and walking into class feeling ready and reassured. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. Listeners can get an exclusive 20% off an IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLlearning.com/audio. Visit IXLlearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
The right window treatments change everything. Your sleep, your privacy, the way every room looks and feels. At Blinds.com, we've spent 30 years making it surprisingly simple to get exactly what your home needs. We've covered over 25 million windows and have 50,000 five-star reviews to prove we deliver. Whether you DIY it or want a pro to handle everything from measure to install, we have you covered. Real design professionals, free samples, zero pressure. Right now, get up to 50% off with minimum purchase, plus get a free professional measure at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions apply.
BJP from the No Ceilings Plus Discord asks, most likely undrafted guy to have the Fred VanVleet career impact, not necessarily a point guard. Man, it's so hard to answer this question as far as like who's going to be the undrafted guy, because like it almost feels like they're slim pickings as far as like who's declared for the draft with the whole, the way that the draft is shaken out with NIL and so many people going back to school, it almost feels like, is everybody getting drafted this year? Like, congratulations, you entered, you're in. But, and I know you asked not necessarily a point guard, but I think that, you know, one of the reasons that Fred VanVleet was able to become Fred VanVleet is because, you know, he was a guy who had a lot of usage in college. And I think that, like, that's kind of one of the ways that you become Fred VanVleet, is that you're used to playing with the ball in your hands. So I think point guards generally like might be easier to answer in this way. Two guys that I thought of, Mark Sears, who definitely has an uphill battle, obviously lefty guard, is going to get a lot of more Brunson comps, but he's a guy who won a ton of games in college, can shoot the ball at a high level, on it, off it, can penetrate, get into the paint, get paint touches, is strong, even though he's really tiny. Like, he does have a good frame that hopefully, you know, he can hold up a little bit defensively, at least be a pest, really take away your space, get in you at the point of attack. So Mark Sears was a name that I thought of. And then Javon Small from West Virginia, who's a guy that I've been high on all year. I thought he had a really strong season, definitely some inconsistencies and inefficiencies at time, but this is a guy who played with the ball in his hands a lot. He can get his own off the bounce. And then, you know, he's a really creative playmaker. I think he was like 35%+ assist percentage this year, and he defends. So he's a two-way guy who can score the rock, touch the paint, make plays for his teammates, and cause defensive events, and also be a pest at the point of attack. And he has better size than a guy like Mark Sears. Obviously, like, trying to find the next Fred VanVleet, if you knew who that was, they wouldn't go undrafted. So, you know, really, we're just throwing darts here. But I think Javon Small is certainly a guy who could potentially be on that radar. Now heading over to our Twitter, where we had some more questions. To round out our 10 questions in this Q&A, Trell Interlude asks, thoughts on Noah Penda and your favorite team fits for him? Now, Noah Penda's another name that I could have mentioned in the question earlier by Matthew McKenna when he asked, like, who are the international prospects that draft fans should know? Noah Penda is definitely getting some first-round buzz, which is why I didn't include him in those names, but he's also a guy that I could see falling into the second round for sure. Personally, I'm a little bit lower on Noah Penda because I think that, like, his potential is like fifth starter. You know, he kind of reminds me of like a Jeremy Sohan / Kyle Anderson type. And like, he's got good feel, right? Like, he's really skilled. Like, he's got a versatile profile, but like, I don't necessarily see like a standout skill outside of, I think he's like a really strong rebounder. I think he's a really like solid team defender. I think he's in, you know, the right positions. I think he could defend on the ball. He's strong, right? So like, these are all good things in his favor, but I'm weary on him becoming like a consistent outside shooter. Certainly I have more confidence in his shot than I did, you know, for Jeremy Sohan. But I think that, you know, he's a guy that like, if he's taking a bunch of shots in a game, you're probably pretty happy about that. I think he's comfortable with the ball in his hands, but he's not a creative shot creator, ball handler. So like, he can get downhill and use his physicality and like, and his skill. So he'll dip his shoulder into somebody to create space near the rim, or he'll get downhill and then kind of like plant, pivot, use his footwork to kind of get guys off tilter and kind of take advantage of that. But when he gets to the rim, he can't finish. You know, he's like 52% in the half court this year. Now he's playing pros, all that. That certainly matters. But, you know, a guy who I think is like a four, and in like some scenarios, maybe play some small ball five, but definitely doesn't offer the kind of vertical pop and like elite kind of like reaction, quick twitch ability to be like a consistent guy who's protecting the rim as a small ball five. It's really just like, hey, can we survive because he's strong and he's smart? So I'm personally a little bit lower because I see him topping out as just like kind of like a role player. But as far as what teams would he fit on, I mean, I could see him playing on the Oklahoma City Thunder. Obviously they have a million guys, but they value guys who, you know, are dribble, pass, shoot, defend. And while obviously the shoot is a little questionable with Penda, you know, OKC certainly fits the bill there. I could see him playing in Golden State, maybe. I think Golden State, you know, having guys who, you know, he could probably run some post split action as a passer. I think he can operate out of DHOs. I think that would be kind of interesting. I mean, those would probably be my two top options for him. If I was looking around for teams, you know, I think he could be interesting in Boston, you know, a ton of space, and, you know, he's just another smart player to fit in there. But he's one of these guys where like, it's not going to be a sexy pick if you draft him. And he's just like solid, and hopefully you get a, you know, a starter out of him, but I don't think that's guaranteed. There's so much talent in the NBA now that it's hard to just be like, hey, this guy's going to be a fifth starter. So I'm a little lower. I would take a flyer on him in the early second round, but those are my thoughts. You know, maybe not as, as consistent with some people, you know, in the scouting community, but I like him. I don't love him. Raps Ujiri asks, in order, who are the top five one-on-one scorers in this draft? I think, I don't know if I'm going to give you in direct order. I might just list five guys who I think are pretty interesting one-on-one. And what do we mean? Or do we mean like just scoring out of isolations? Do we mean like playing one-on-one and like you get three dribbles max? I don't know what the rules are to this, so I'm just going to list guys. I'm starting with Tahad Pettiford out of Auburn. Yes, he's like 5'11", but I absolutely love Tahad. He's electric. In a one-on-one scenario, he's got a deep bag. He can create space. He can knock down tough shots from range, but he also has like lightning quick blow-by ability. So I think just in a strictly one-on-one situation, Tahad Pettiford is a devastating player. I think Cooper Flagg would probably go underrated in this exercise, but he's 6'7", 6'8". He's strong. He's comfortable getting to his spots. He can turn. He can kind of dip his shoulder. He can hit those little mid-range fadeaways. The bag might not be as deep as it's going to be 5 years from now, but I think that he does enough isolation scoring that I'd feel pretty confident in him. Derek Queen, I think one-on-one would be pretty tough to stop because I think he's a, for his size, he's a really slick ball handler. So he can kind of get you with his shimmy and shake, but also he's big with good touch and he's good near the rim. So like, he can kind of overpower you if you're not as strong as him. And if you are as strong as him, you're probably a little bigger and you're not as fast and he's just going to take you off rip. So I think Derek Queen in a one-on-one situation would be really hard to stop. You could play off of him obviously a little bit because you don't have to necessarily worry about the deep range shooting, but he's comfortable like 17 feet, right? So he'll knock those shots down in your eye if you don't guard him. Obviously, you have to talk about Ace Bailey and Trey Johnson, right? Trey Johnson is a guy who hits nothing but tough shots, it seems like. It almost feels like he's not going to pass the rock until he realizes that this shot is too tough for me, and then he'll pass it. So one defender, two defenders, you put him on a one-on-two, he's still going to be able to knock down tough shots. But he's got a pretty good bag. I'd worry about him kind of finishing off balance near the rim in a one-on-one situation, but certainly a tough shot maker. And Ace Bailey, like, the dude is, like, I don't know, probably going to measure close to 6'10 in shoes. And he can just kind of rise up and shoot. So yeah, his handle might need work, which is going to be, you know, a consistent theme as we transition into this next question by South Central M95 from Twitter. What are some areas of improvement for Ace Bailey to reach his full potential? So transitioning into that.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around waiting for the track to dry is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
I've always dreamed of being able to order my coffee in Italian like a local, instead of just pointing at the menu and hoping for the best. There's something about speaking another language with real confidence that opens up a whole new world of experiences. That's why I'm so excited about Rosetta Stone Sapphire. It's their biggest launch in over a decade. It takes that research-backed method we all know and trust and adds fresh, cutting-edge features that make it easier than ever to go from knowing a few phrases to speaking naturally about the topics you actually care about. What I love is that you aren't just memorizing vocabulary lists. You learn entirely in your new language through visuals and audio, just like you did as a kid. One of my favorite new features is chat missions. It turns conversation practice into a game, putting you in real-world scenarios, like ordering at a restaurant or asking for directions, and giving you missions to complete. You get real-time feedback along the way, so you build that confidence before you ever have to use your skills in the real world. If you want to take your language skills to the next level, don't wait to try Rosetta Stone Sapphire. Listeners of this podcast can get 20% off their Rosetta Stone Sapphire subscription when they sign up today. This gets you access to Rosetta Stone Sapphire in 25 languages. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10 to redeem your 20% off. That's rosettastone.com/rs10.
From the one-on-one topic, Ace can shoot right over you, right? He doesn't go deep into a bag a lot of times when you watch him. A lot of it is like pretty efficient. Like he's taking one, two, three dribbles, and then he just knows, like, well, I could shoot over you, right? So I don't need to create as much space. In a one-on-one situation, that's definitely apparent. And, you know, if anybody lives on draft Twitter like I do, you'd know that there was, you know, somebody made a post about how he was a 99th percentile isolation scorer, and then people went into the efficiency because it was misleading, because he's actually just takes isolation shots in the 99th percentile, and that's not his efficiency. Whatever. He's obviously comfortable living in that space. He just needs to get better. So what are those areas of improvement? Obviously, his handle developing would be a massive thing for him, right? He's got a pretty basic handle right now. Sometimes it gets loose, sometimes it gets sloppy. I think it's because he plays pretty upright. He needs to work on his flexibility in that space. I think flexibility will go along with his handle development. Him being able to kind of get lower will allow him to kind of keep, I think, the ball more on a string than he currently has it. Sometimes right now it's a yo-yo that gets away from him. I think kind of just getting lower to the ground will tighten that all up. That'll help. And if he could do that, obviously that's going to help some of the other aspects of his game, like his ability to consistently get into the paint. So him being able to get his shot in three dribbles or less in spots he's comfortable with, that's not a problem. But if he's going to continue to develop and get into the paint more, put pressure on the rim, and become a scorer at multiple levels instead of settling, which he definitely does right now. And I still love Ace. I have him fourth on my board right now, so I'm not out on him by any means, but he needs to figure out how to get into the paint and be more creative. And him being able to get into the paint and finish there is also going to open up other areas of his game, like playmaking opportunities when the defense collapses on him, and it's going to help his efficiency. So that handle development will help him get to those spots. So once he gets there, what does he need to work on? Well, he's pretty slight of frame right now, super young, so that's fine, right? But he needs to get stronger. When he gets stronger, he's going to be able to finish through contact more often. And you combine that with his athleticism, and he's got real deal vertical pop. Now all of a sudden, you know, he's getting to the free throw line more, he's finishing more efficiently at the rim, and now you're looking at kind of like the scorer that we want to envision, you know, the way he was talked about potentially coming into the year. And then I want to say quicker decision making. He doesn't have to be a primary creator, a primary initiator, in my opinion, to still hold real value. Right? If he becomes Michael Porter Jr., that's still going to be really valuable. He's still going to get paid like crazy for that. But he needs to become a quicker decision maker. And that means less catch and hold. It doesn't mean I need to do the Luka Trey thing where I'm manipulating the defense out of ball screens and the screen's coming at me. And then, you know, I'm kind of taking a couple of dribbles to the right as I come off the screen, because I know that that's going to make the low man have to sink into the paint because somebody's going to be diving. So he's going to have to tag him, and that's going to open up the corner, and I'm going to live dribble, swing it and skip it there. He doesn't need that. What he needs is just, how do I make the one more pass quick when I'm running off a screen? You know, he loved, you know, getting into the corner and shooting those off balance shots. Like, he's gonna have real gravity in like movement situations. How does he leverage that to get guys open when, you know, two guys have to come at him, right? Like, just being a quicker decision maker, getting the ball and swinging it, not getting it, catching, hold, then you get into your three efficient dribbles. Like, how do you not bog down the offense? I hope that that's something that, you know, he's kind of working on and watching in film. It was also really hard at Rutgers this year because, honestly, like, that Rutgers team was not that talented, right? Like, that Rutgers team really struggled to do much of anything without Dylan or Ace. Like, they, one of the worst rosters that I've personally seen in person in high-level college basketball. So Ace certainly wasn't in a primary position to, like, show a lot of these skills, but it's not excusing it because it's obviously things that he definitely needs to work on to reach his ceiling. So, again, it doesn't have to be playmaking. It's just like, hey, how do we become a more efficient, quicker decision maker as a playmaker? And I think that's kind of really where he needs to go, because I don't look at him as a future number one option, or, you know, the guy who maybe should lead usage for your team in the NBA. And I haven't really felt that way all year. I mean, you know, just seeing him in the same context as a guy like AJ DeBonsa at the Nike Hoop Summit 2024, you could see the level in which DeBonsa was so much more comfortable projecting him out in that way as a number one usage guy. He had his questions this year for sure. But you could just see it because he's more fluid in a lot of the ways that he operates. I had questions seeing that up close with Ace versus AJ. But still, I still think he's going to be a high-level scorer. I think that the tough shots that he hits are going to be valuable in the league when things get tough. He just has some work to do. So handle development, flexibility, strength, quicker decision-making. And now, last question. Zori Bunch of Numbers asks, thoughts on Adutiero and Carter Knox, two wings from Arkansas. I'm a big fan of both of them. I loved Adu last year at Kentucky. I thought he was going to be a prospect last year. Didn't quite work out, and he took a massive leap this year. And I think that we are not talking enough about how he might be the most athletic player in this draft. Some of the plays that some of the explosive plays that he made this year, whether it was coming from the weak side to like swat a shot out of bounds, or whether it was, just posterizing the rim, it's eye-popping stuff. You add in the fact that he has that kind of strength that you wish a guy like Ace Bailey had. And it's really interesting. I mean, he was like so hard to stop from getting downhill this year. It felt like anytime he wanted to get into the paint, he could do it. And if he didn't finish, he was getting fouled. I think he has like adequate levels of feel. So, I thought last year, maybe like one of the things that were interesting about him was that you're going to be able to maybe see more playmaking stuff. I don't know if that's going to be there as much, but I think there are glimpses of it with Adu. But you look at him and you go, all right, so he's a jumper away. He's a jumper away because he has the physicality. He has the athleticism. I think he has the hints of feel that you need. Now, he just needs to become a consistent jump shooter. Easier said than done. But if he does, I think you could look at him as a guy who goes way later in the draft because he's a little bit older as far as experience goes. And you go, all right, can he be like an OG Anunoby type? I'm not saying he gets to OG's level. OG is an incredible basketball player. But like, can he be 90% of that? And I think he could get there, but he's going to have to become a more consistent shooter, and that's just going to be putting in work. And, the NBA is really good at developing shooters, but if it doesn't come around, then he might just be a guy who's the next James Johnson. And I think that's valuable too. James Johnson has hung around the league for 15 years. I don't know what it's at this point, right? But just as a tough physical guy who's going to be able to defend, bring high energy, play fast, that's the kind of guy Tiero could be. So I think those are kind of where you're looking at as far as outcomes. It's like James Johnson to maybe OG Anunoby. Carter Knox was a guy that when I saw him in high school with OTE, I was like, whoa, this kid is nice. I saw him play against, it was in some tournament at Baruch College. Jalil Bethia was there. I forgot who else. There was another like high level prospect. And I was like, oh, Carter Knox, best dude here, like by far. And you saw it in his physicality, his frame, you saw it in his athleticism, you saw it in his shot making ability. And I had Carter Knox as a lottery guy coming into the year. I was really high on him. Now, Carter is a little bit older than your average freshman, so that certainly kind of is, a mark against him in some ways because he had a pretty inconsistent year. But I thought by the end of the year, he really started fitting into a role. And like, if you watch that St. John's game in the tournament, like Carter Knox was doing stuff. Like he was blocking shots. He was defending. He was, getting to the rim. I think that Carter Knox has a much higher, baseline now, seeing the role that he played at Arkansas as a guy who isn't going to like bust out the combo moves and go deep into his bag and can play more as like a role-playing wing than I thought he was going to be capable of coming into the year. I thought there was like some high-end outcomes that he was going to show. And if he didn't show them, it was probably going to be like, all right, he's just a multi-year guy. Now I think there are real outcomes for him in which like he could just stick around as a role player, earn his reps, and kind of develop a little bit into more. And, maybe he becomes like a Ben Mathurin type guy. But I really like Carter Knox. I would take him in the first round. I'd take Tiero in the first round as well. And I'm really interested to see Carter Knox's decision, whether he is going to stay in the draft or go back to college and continue to develop. And I think both paths for him could work out. Selfishly, yeah, I'd love to see him go back to school and develop and bust out a little bit more of that on-ball creation. But by the end of the season, I really, really liked what I saw out of Carter Knox. It looked like a guy who was ready to play a role for a winning basketball situation. Still a long way to go as far as his development, but really, really liked what I saw out of him. So those are the 10 questions in our Q&A for I'm recording this. It's the last day of April. So if you're watching or you're listening in the podcast feed or you're watching on YouTube, it's probably going to be May 1st. So we're in May. We are like a month and a half away from the NBA draft. You know, we have the lottery coming up. We're in the thick of it, y'all. This is the fun time of year for us at No Ceilings. This is what we've lived for. This is what we've grinded tape for. So please, if you're into the draft, your team got eliminated from the playoffs, and you're looking for prospects, who's going to be the savior? Head to NoCeilingsNBA.com. Okay? Subscribe. We have articles coming out every single day. We got a lot of fun content coming up. We're going to have player interviews, player film breakdowns. We're going to have scouting video breakdowns, big boards, mock drafts, just a whole bunch of different content. We have a ton of full season player highlights. We have our podcasts up in video form. So that's on our YouTube. We have our articles on our website. You could sign up for No Ceilings Plus. That gives you access to our Discord, where you could be a member of our community and, you know, pick our brains and ask us questions and participate in awesome dialogue with the community we have going on there. You could subscribe for that at the website. And if you're listening on the podcast feed, make sure that you rate, review, all that good stuff. If you're following on YouTube right now, make sure that you like, subscribe, share, all that good stuff. I appreciate you listening, watching, all of the above. I'll be back next week with Albert. And Albert and I got a bunch of fun stuff coming up because I'm heading to LA to go watch some players work out in a couple of weeks. And Albert lives in LA. He'll be there. So he's coming with. But we'll be back on the podcast feed together next week. So make sure you stay locked in. Until next time, I'm out. Appreciate you guys for watching.
This is the sound of captivity. This is the sound of rescue. And this is the sound of freedom. Give Armenia's captive bears a second chance by supporting International Animal Rescue. Call 508-826-1083 or search The Great Bear Rescue to learn more.